Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Great news. Ghostbed Cyber Monday sale is happening, so you can get 25% off site-wide for a limited time. You go to ghostbed.com/Norton. Use the promo code Norton to check out. Oh, my God. There's a ghost on the phone. That's ghostbed.com/Norton. Promo code Norton. Upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. Oh, some exclusions apply. See site for details. Terrible news, folks. I don't have any money for food. Taffy hasn't eaten in 3 weeks, so I need all the support at my live shows so we can feed little Taffy. Come see me December 18th, Bangor, Maine. I'm going to be the 19th at Foxwoods in Connecticut and the 20th at, I know your little stomach is rumbling, at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. And then I go to Sellersville, Pennsylvania. And in February, I'm going to be in Bakersfield, California and Las Vegas. Oh, God, look at me, so hungry. Okay, good. It's always, I always hate starting anything. Like, we're having a conversation before, and then we take that pause while he sets this up, and now it's like, okay, time for us to talk. And I always hate, even after all these years of doing radio, I hate starting a conversation from zero.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, the weirdest thing is being on some of these TV studios where they're like ignoring you and looking at their notes, and all of a sudden it's like, blah.
Yeah. Especially if they're like trying to like ambush you. Like, especially if it's an aggressive.
It's so uncomfortable. Or I've had someone be nice, like you're just so pleasant to me, and this become a total like dick or bitch, like as soon as like the camera starts rolling.
That, which is kind of shitty. Like, if someone's going to be, how do they when you walk in, they can't go, you're a dead man. They have to kind of play nice, but it does feel duplicitous.
That's so weird. Like asking like really pleasant, ask about your family, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, oh, I'm going to like try and tear you a new one as soon as the camera starts rolling.
How could people not like? What's wrong with you? And I was telling my producer this too. When you were first on the scene, I was like, I wouldn't vote for this guy. And then I interviewed you, read your book, and I loved you. Like, I gave you a chance. I'm like, sometimes you prejudge somebody in social media. And then I read what you said in the book. I'm like, this guy's really smart. Like, I loved what you, your book, Forward, I thought was so good. And I was trying to relate to somebody. You made a point about how both sides are not, it's kind of the system is built for them not to work together.
Yeah.
And I told this woman that, and she goes, what did he say? And I'm so stupid, I couldn't remember what you said. I'm just like, you got to read the book. But what was your point about why both sides don't work well together?
It's because they're incentivized not to work together. And I had a call today with a guy in D.C. who told me that he has senators who are trying to work on clean energy. And the biggest problem for them is environmental groups that want to shiv them if they do something about clean energy that involves the other party. And it's like, wait a minute, this is objectively good for the planet.
Right.
Like, you're going to ship me for this? And they're like, yes, we will. and so that's like the incentive structure right now, that if you reach across the aisle, your own side's going to turn on you in a big way. And so then to keep their job, they're like, okay, I guess I'm not going
to
do it.
Did that happen to Marjorie Taylor Greene? Because like, she's somebody I was not a fan of her policies at all. And then it seems like as she became like more legit or more in the system, she was like, hey, I'm sorry I said that and I shouldn't have said that. And then she pushes back on Trump and then she's out. Like, is that kind of what it is? Where, like, if you say something against the party, they'll turn on you?
Yeah, the biggest threat in Washington, D.C. is we're going to primary you. And the reason why it's that is because 90% of members of Congress are in a non-competitive district. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Democrats be like, we're going to challenge. It's like, I don't give a shit. Like, you know, you can't touch me.
Yeah.
But if your own party says we're going to primary you, then that's a threat. And when they say that, that also means they're going to fund your challenger. And so your job security goes from 94%, which is the reelect rate, to like sub 40% if they decide to primary you. So that's the stick they use to keep you in line. And so if you're Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, you're like, I can't be touched by the other party. So, like, who can I be touched by? And then it's really your party bosses. And if you go against them, then your job security plummets.
Right. And it really is frustrating because, like, you see California, where they're really good at dumping people who they don't like. Like, they got rid of, like, Chesa Boudin. They got rid of, what was his name? Garcon, the DA they didn't like.
They tried
to get rid of Gavin Newt. Like, they'll have these special elections to boot you, but we can't do that in New York, right? Don't we have it where you can't get rid of people, like, midterm like that?
Yeah, the recall is an unusual mechanism, and California does have it more readily available to voters, you know, for better or for worse. I mean, I happen to think recalling Boudin was awesome. I was in San Francisco right before that happened, and it was at, like, a Walgreens. I got robbed in front of me. And then
it got robbed in front of you?
It got robbed in front of me. I was, like, literally just, like, standing there. And then this guy, like, ran out with, like, you know, freaking sacks of loot. And then the clerk literally looked at me. And this is seriously, like, you scripted it. Literally looked at me, shrugged, and said, San Francisco.
Yeah.
I said, ran out because, and by the way, there was even a security guard there. And the security guard, after the person just ran out, security guard didn't lift a finger.
No.
And the security guard, I was like, hey, like, you have a policy on, like, what to do in this situation? And the security guard literally said these words, I'm a visual deterrent.
It's probably, you know what it is? It's lawyers.
You know?
So am I, naked.
But by the way, and this is also a true story, this really sounds like I made this up, that Walgreens closed the following month.
Of course, because they were probably getting robbed.
Like the retail district, they were like, hey, guys, you know, we're getting looted right and left, and the visual deterrent's not working, so we're going to shut the doors.
But that's probably lawyers, too. Like, I heard that, like, companies, like, there was a 7-Eleven that got robbed recently, and the woman had her own gun, or her own weapon, and then the company fired her because you're only allowed to use items in the store to defend yourself. Like, they're all afraid of lawsuits. Like, that's why security guards can't tackle you, because somebody, you know, they're afraid of getting sued.
Yeah, so they've done the math, and they realize that it's better to let the person walk out with the stuff, but then word gets out that that's the policy, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, the cabinets are locked, and then the store closes. I mean, that's kind of the chain of events.
Right. What is the answer to that? Like, you seem like you walk, like, a really interesting line between you're progressive in a lot of your things and your policies and your thoughts, but you also, you know, you're not ridiculous with allowing crime to happen either.
You know, I like to think that I, like, traffic in the real world. and part of it is that I've run businesses, and I joke that you can't yell at the numbers.
Right.
Like, you know, you can't, like, make them ideologically responsive. So you just want stuff to work better. I think most people want stuff to work better. The problem is you have folks taking what I see as essentially, like, tribal stances on policies, and then it kind of takes on a life of its own, and people don't pay attention to what will happen in real life.
What is it? Because I get very frustrated with that. Like, and as a comic, I love, like, when you were on Shane's podcast, I love how you handled that. Like, yeah, he said something, but that's what comedians do. Like, their job is, you had such a, I thought, a very grounded take on it. Like, it was just, look, it's a comic. If he says something you don't like, if he's not entertaining, he won't work. You had, like, a really grounded take on it. But it's almost like that doesn't inspire rage in people. And people seem to want anger to be, you understand? They watch something to feel angry about it, or for it to validate what they already think.
Yeah. That's the tribalism I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, what you need is a tribal cue, and then heroes and villains. And then you got the team lines drawn. And then you know what you're supposed to do. And so, like, I'm supposed to hate you. I'm supposed to cheer you. On the comedian front, I mean, I said, I think it was on Bill Maher, actually. I was like, look, comedians have a very hard job, which is to make us laugh. Entertain us. Not easy. You know, if you try and give them also the responsibility of, like, what the right thing to think is about a situation, it's, like, totally unrealistic. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you giving a comedian that responsibility? That's madness. You know, just, like, let them have their job, which is a very hard job. And the high end, it's not to tell you how to think. It's actually to make you think, even if you have a negative response. I mean, you know, at least like you had a reaction. And when I talked to Shane about it, Shane's like, look, I was just trying to find the funny. I was just trying to find the line. And on a podcast too, by the way, in that particular podcast, I was like, no one heard this fucking podcast when he first, when it first aired, it's like someone freaking unearthed it then to use it. It's like, you know, like I find that stuff really frustrating as well.
But they go back and grab old quotes on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you record like, in your case, like thousands of hours of stuff. I mean, you know, guess what? You'll probably find something somewhat off color or objectionable if you're trying to find the funny.
On mine, you could literally, if with one Google search, you will find enough. I've a decade of saying horrible things. It's almost like there's no joy in that for people because there's so much of it. It's so abundant.
Yeah. Well, that character drama is fueling the conflict and the tribalism. It's making, by the way, it's making it so that politics is repulsive to a lot of reasonable people because they're like, why am I going to get my reputation dragged? And I was talking to Mark Cuban about running for president because I was trying to get him to run, honestly.
Did you want to be his running mate?
I was very happy to be his wingman and told him as much. And Mark said, like, yeah, I had some really wild nights in my 20s. And I don't really want. And I was like, no one gives a shit about that, man. Come on. But you know, but if you're him or a lot of other folks who are real people, you know that stuff's going to get used against you in various ways. Yeah. Your reputation's going to get dragged. And he has, you know, he had teenage kids and he was like, do I really want to put them through that? So like that's the environment we're in.
And he has a fun life. Like, he's Mark Cuban. He owns the Mavericks. Like, I think he still owns the Mavericks. Like, he's a billionaire. Like, why would you want to? Like, when you look at why Trump ran, you're like, you're a billionaire. Everybody loved you. Like, why put yourself into that thing where it's just going to be, you know, you're going to be attacked. Everything you've ever done is going to be dragged. I don't understand why a guy would do that when he's got $1 billion.
A lot of people have done the same math, man. You know, it's like, for me, you know, I joke that it's like, oh, I guess I didn't have wild enough nights in my 20s where, like,
you know, like, there's no controversy with you.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't stop some folks from trying to find something, but
sure.
I had a relatively anonymous life prior to being a presidential candidate. I'm grateful to you for having me on and for digging in to the ideas because. You know, I'm just like son of immigrants who thinks that this country could be doing a lot better than it is.
Well, I read, like I said, I read that book. And after talking to you, it was like I couldn't put the book down. I was like, I love the way this guy thinks. Like, it wasn't like I didn't feel like I was being lectured. That's another thing. People just are sick of being lectured by it. It's like you kind of laid out your case. And hey, if you like it, you like it. And I think people respond more to that than they do with someone wagging their finger in their face.
Dude, one of the most profound moments for me on the trail was there was a Fox interview and there was a woman in the Midwest who was asked, like, hey, what do you think of the Democratic candidates and who do you actually like? And she said the only one of those candidates I would support is Yang. And then the anchor was like, huh, that's out of left field. Like, you know, right. Why do you say that? And she said, he's the only one who doesn't seem like he's talking down to me.
Right.
And I heard that and I was like, hell yeah, because like I'm not talking down to anyone. You know, it turns out that 42% of my supporters weren't Dems. I had a lot of Trumpers who liked me. And I joke it was because a lot of the Trumpers just don't like the establishment and they sensed that the establishment would never send the magical Asian man from the future who wanted to give everyone money. Like that's not an establishment type move. And so the woman was like, I'm fine with Yang, like, you know, and I was like, oh, I'm really glad that she gets it.
That's funny. Magical Asian man from the future. And if you want to call in, let's say, what is the number? 720-820-1337. Did I get it right? Finally. Okay. So if you want to call in for advice or a suggestion, and if you don't, then just keep listening. What an awful radio hack I am. I'm just keep listening. Stupid asshole. We're on a podcast. I am always amazed with how how wrong people are about what's the craziest thing about yourself that you heard? Like I've learned when I heard rumors about me that were just not true, I realized like I can't judge other people as quickly because I know how wrong people can be. What is the thing about yourself you heard or your policy where you're like, that's not even fucking close?
Dude, the weirdest thing is that I got accused of being a white supremacist. And I was like, you do realize I'm not white, right?
Like, oh, no, that's why I had you on.
You know, it's like, and so I went to my team. I was like, this is total nonsense. So just ignore it. They were like, no, you should apologize. Like, apologize for what?
What did you say? What did you say that somebody purposely, by the way, twisted into that and disingenuously twisted into saying that about you?
I said two things. I said, number one, the opiate deaths in rural America are out of control. And then people took that and was like, that's a dog whistle to to white supremacists. I was like, last I checked, you know, like that's just a fact that we should all be concerned about. And then the second thing was I talked about how we're a generation away from people like shooting up other people and like civil war type stuff, which I was, you know, like I just genuinely felt. And so people thought that was also like an appeal to like a like white nationalist element. And by the way, that, you know, now doesn't seem very, very far-fetched,
right.
You know, given everything. So I got accused of being a white supremacist. And then my team was like, you should issue an apology or a statement. And I was like, I'm not issuing shit.
Right.
Like, I didn't say shit. Like, I'm like, you know, I challenge anyone to find anything in like my, but then it does push you in a particular way where you start then like, you know, being like, hey, I've got all these black friends, or like, shut, that frankly does not help anything.
you want to say it to go like, no, but look, it's true, but it you're right, it never helps.
Yeah, so.
So I've actually said I have no black friends, and they're like, oh, all right, he's not a racist.
Yeah, so that was that was probably the like most infuriating thing that.
Because how do you defend somebody purposefully twisting something? And it's like, I don't even know how to address that. It's so ludicrous.
Well, and it's like a sign of the times, too, where, by the way, I think a lot of folks who voted for Trump this past cycle were just on the outs with the establishment and said, well, in this bizarre two-party system, I guess that means I'm like on this team.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I think the vast majority of Americans at this point are like, look, neither of these teams has their shit together entirely or speaks for me. More than like a fraction of the time and that like there's this whole middle zone. And if you knew that the middle zone was an actual thing, then you could raise your hand and be like, yo, I'm not this or that. I mean, right now half of Americans say we're independents and it's 2/3 among young people. And you know, 75% don't think the status quo is working. So, like that's what you want. But the truth is that you get attacked from one side or the other. And then you're like, okay, if you're attacking me, then like, who hates you? I guess I'm now.
Yeah. Yeah. You try to take shelter somewhere. And if that group is not attacking you at the moment, then like, all right, I guess these are the people who are looking out for me.
It's one reason why I admire Shane so much was that he got attacked by one side. And then he like refused to like, you know, take it to heart and be like, oh, I guess I'm on this team.
Right.
He was like, look, I'm not on a team. I'm just here to make you laugh. And then he wound up, bringing, in my opinion, millions of people together by just focusing on his craft.
And in a way, he broke the back of that thinking without meaning to, because the business looked and went, oh, he made it without us. It's almost like the business can't respond as much to fake outrage because they see guys can go out on their own now without the business backing you, and you can still go out and make it and become...
Totally. He just did it the hard way.
Yeah.
He just like went out, toured, got bigger and bigger crowds until eventually SNL was like, hey, you're going to host even though you know we quote-unquote fired you. That was such a beautiful American arc to me. I actually include that in I've got a new book coming out in February called Hey Yang, Where's My $1,000? And you're going to love the alternate title. The alternate title was Hey, Am I Racist or Are You Andrew Yang?
Well, have people said that to you?
Yes. They've said both of these things to me. But it's all good, you know? I mean, that's all funny. But then I write about the Shane Gillis, like, arc and think, like, wow, that's, like, a beautiful American story. And
right.
We should all have it so good. Because there is this kind of weird establishment-y media machine that occasionally, like, lashes out at various figures. And you see those people look up being like, what the hell's going on now? Right. Like, what am I getting accused of? Like, what's happening? And then it ends up pushing you to one side or the other. I'm sure, like, you know, a lot of comedians you can think of, like, have gone through a version of this.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of learn to deal with it after a while, but it never ceases to be frustrating. And I like that you said tribal cues. That's a great term. I've never heard that term before, but I'm going to use it and take full credit. And people
please
great
take it.
Yeah. I'll be like, oh, I just thought of it. Oh, what great news. The holidays are here. Steven Sondheim, the I Hate Steven Singer guy. You don't need to say that. We all know who Steven Singer is. Has the number one gift for Christmas. It's real natural diamond stud earrings. They really are gorgeous. Everyone knows gold and diamond prices. They're at their highest in history right now. Lucky for you, Steven has locked in his diamond studs at the old prices. His Anita stud diamonds, they still just start at $298. Anita stud? I mean, why don't I show up? at the same perfect price as last year, 298 clams. That's how I say it. Same incredible value. There's no better time to get a pair of diamond studs from the great Steven Singer Jewelers. This is not going to last forever. Each pair is eye flawless and near colorless. Really beautiful stuff. And they arrive with his safety silicone backs, so you never have to worry about losing them. Plus, with Steven's full lifetime value trade-in, you can trade in your studs anytime and get exactly what you paid for them. Towards a larger pair. I should probably say that in one sentence, but I said it in two. Towards a larger pair. Because I'm leaving you hanging. So you're like, what's he going to say? That's what I'm going to say. Steven believes in his product. You can go to IHateStevenSinger.com. Order with fast and free shipping to arrive in time for Christmas. And experience the difference between Steven and these other cruds that call themselves jewelers. Steven and these other shitbag thieves. These dirtbag, shitty thieves that call themselves jewelers. Fuck them. Steven's the best. IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. I don't know. I still haven't recovered yet from that horrifying phone call that I got from beyond. Doing the ghost bed read, it just said, mattresses. I'm a master of improv. Ugh. Most mattresses feel good for a while. Then one day you wake up and you realize your back has been plotting against you. That's why Ghost Bed does things differently. Family owned. They have more than 20 years experience. They actually know how to build a bed that lasts. And every Ghost Bed mattress is designed for durability, comfort, and proper support. Because great sleep is not a guessing game and it shouldn't be a guessing game. I love my Ghost Bed mattress. I also love my Ghost Bed sheets and my Ghost Bed pillowcase. Very, very comfortable stuff. I'll tell you what's underrated. Not waking up in pain. That's underrated. Ghost Bed's exclusive ProCore technology gives your body targeted support right where you need it most, through your midsection. I need a lot of support in my midsection, you know. Helping you keep your spine aligned, keeps the pressure off your joints. Basically, it kind of gives your back the support that you wish your friends would give you. Sometimes you don't know how to read a line. Stand up for 35 years. That's how I delivered that joke. Oh, if you're a hot sleeper, by the way, which I am, I'm a very warm. It shouldn't say hot sleeper because that implies sexy. It should say if you're a gross, sweating slug. Indeed, that is me. The cooling materials regulate your temperature year round. I really do. That makes a huge difference in my life. Overheating at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, it's not just a summer problem. It's a year round misery, and Ghost Bed helps you avoid that. That's one of my favorite things. It's just a comfortable, cool temperature. And if you've been hot in bed and just laying there stuck to the sheets, feeling like a pile of vomit, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Every mattress comes with a 101-night sleep trial, 20 to 25-year warranty, shipping. It's fast and it's free. Most orders arrive in 2 to 5 days. And right now during Ghost Bed's Cyber Monday sale, 25% off site-wide. What are you waiting for? Site-wide. I said it wrong. Site-wide, stupid. 25% off site-wide for a limited time. Ghostbed.com/Norton. Use the promo code Norton at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/Norton. Promo code Norton. Upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed as I have done. The makers of the coolest beds in the world. Some exclusions apply. See site for details. And the final line should be, sleep like daddy. In your book, you spoke so much about what's the word I'm looking for? It's the open primaries.
Yeah, yeah.
Where that's a problem where like, no, like from, again, maybe Mom Donnie will be better than I'm expecting him to be. Like, I try not to believe that what everybody says.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's no open primaries.
Totally.
Can you explain how that would make the system better?
Well, so, I mean, Mamdani is an example where he won the Democratic primary. But, like, the Democratic primary, you know, excluded the majority of New Yorkers in terms of, like, turnout. And then he won the general against Andrew Cuomo and Sliwa with something like 50.4% of the vote. Cuomo maybe got 41, and then Sliwa maybe got 7 or 8.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. And so everyone's treating it like, oh, wow, like, you know, Mamdani landslide. And you're like, wait a minute. The Democratic nominee in a city with a 6-1 Democratic to Republican registration advantage gets 50.4% of the vote, and you're treating it like it's this,
right,
this smashing victory. I mean, the fact is, if you'd had, like, a, you know, totally open primary, anyone could vote, and let's say you had something like instant runoff voting where you could vote, you could vote for multiple candidates. Like, I'm not so sure Mamdani wins. And I'm with you now. It's like, look, I'm actually friendly with Zohran, and I'm hoping for the best because I live here, and you got to hope for the best now that, you know, come to power. But you got to know that this process tilted the table towards him. And I actually happen to know something that makes me super sad, is that there were some people who were trying to change the primary process so that it was like anyone can vote.
Yeah.
And there are folks who are trying to prevent it because they think it helps Zohran and people like him compete and win, because they know that they actually don't have majority appeal. You know, what they have is they have a majority of a minority sometimes.
Yeah.
And it ends up skewing our politics and our policy.
I was so pissed at Curtis. Like, I understand Curtis has no obligation. And technically, even if you add everything he had to Cuomo, he still would have lost. But do you think that Curtis staying in was him being dedicated and, hey, I'm a Republican, it's not my job? Or do you think it was selfish, knowing that that was going to help Mamdani get elected?
You know, it's tough. I mean, I actually think of Curtis as, like, he's a genuine actor. And you know, I mean, like, he's like, what I mean by that is, like, I'm going to run on this ticket. And, like, you can offer me money. You can, like, you know, threaten me. Like, I'm just going to do my thing.
Yeah.
And so on some level, you got to respect that.
He's the realest guy, by the way. I mean, Guardian Angels, he got shot by the mob. Like, totally. Of all of those guys, he's the realest New Yorker by far.
Yeah. Like, I've spent time with Curtis, and I like him personally. So, you know, like, it's his one of the things. I've been a candidate, and one thing I try to do is I try not to be like, oh, you should do this, you should do that.
Right.
Because, like, if you're a candidate, it's actually a very, very personal set of decisions. Like, you decided to run, you're generally walking through, like, firestorms and shitstorms and the rest of it. And so, like, if you're someone who's, like, lobbying, like, extra shit into the shitstorm, be like, oh, you should get out or whatever. It's
right.
like that feels, you know, kind of like armchair quarterbacky. Like, the person who's in the mix has, like, a very personal decision to make. I will say, I personally would not run in a race where I thought I was going to augment the chances of something I didn't want to happen.
Yes.
Like, I'm a pragmatic.
Sure.
I'm a math guy. So I'm like, look, math says I'm probably going to do harm with this. I'm not going to do it. I also think it's like a deeply personal decision. Like, you sacrificed a lot to run. Like, who am I to tell you to, you know, get the hell out?
Will Mamdani be like, again, I don't want to dislike this guy.
He's a very likable human. If you
as a person, he seems like a nice guy.
He's a very likable human that way.
I there's certain things I wish that he would condemn, but, like, I don't want to just buy the hype in a negative way either. Like, I would like to give the guy a chance and go, but is he going to be as devastating to anybody who makes a decent amount of money as people think he's going to be?
A lot of that's not in his power.
Okay.
To be honest with you. So, like, that's part of it too, where, I actually wrote up my thoughts on Zohran when he won the Democratic primary. So if anyone has an interest, you can Google Andrew Yang Zohran Mamdani and it'll pop up. And I made a list of things. I was like, look, if I'm Zohran, I keep the police commissioner. I talk to business leaders. Like, I try and, you know, build some bridges. And he has done several of the things that I suggest. Like, he did keep Jessica Tisch. He has met with business leaders. You know, I think he's going to outsource his relationship with the police to Tisch, which, given the fact that most police, like, you know, aren't fans of his, is probably the right move.
Right.
Like, I was endorsed by the police captains and the firefighters. And so, like, because I thought to myself, man, if I do this job, like, I really need to be working hand in hand with these guys. Like, it was, you know, it's like they're in my mind mission critical. And so I think it's like a real handicap if you don't have a great relationship with those guys. By the way, one of the high points of running in that race was cops. A lot of them saw my Joe Rogan interview too, so that was good. If shocker, cops and firefighters watch Rogan.
Yeah.
But but they'd come up to me too, and they'd be like, "Hey Yang, like, remember me for your security detail."
Ah.
And I was like, interesting. And so then I looked this up, and it's like, you know, you have a couple dozen officers on your security detail, and they get full pay, and they're working, it's like 3 or 4 days a week. And so it's like a good gig.
Sure.
And I was like, oh my God, like that's going to be fucking dope.
Yeah.
You know,
aren't you amazed at the guys that hate the cops so much that any candidate, you know, defund the police, but all of them have police protection. All of them have police bodyguards.
Yeah. That always struck me as just like, well, what, you know what that is? Again, that's like tribal cues. It's ideological. It's like, you know, as soon as you're in the seat, you're super grateful to have the freaking cop next to you because there's going to be some bonehead.
Yeah.
To do something. But when you're, you know, like in the tribe, then you just, like, do the tribal chorus. And you can see as people near actual power, they're like, what did I say? Oh shit. Like, oh, you took that seriously? Like, I didn't really mean that seriously. I mean, I was just being a good tribe member,
surviving in the moment. And by the way, if anybody wants to call, if anyone calls, we can go to them. But before we do, I want to say one thing. I'm not going to complain about social media. I just think that everybody,
dude, a lot of social media,
very angry, and we're weighing in instantly. It's almost like you're everyone's first thought. We're all hearing and responding to without thinking. And you have something called Noble Mobile, which is a very interesting. Did I say it right?
Yeah, or Noble Mobile. Yeah, let's go.
Which I think is really interesting because it's where you guys are actually kind of encouraging people to not use as much data or not use your phone as much, and you give money back. How does that work? Because it seemed like a real thing, not just a good pitch. It seemed like very legit.
Oh yeah, it's very legit. Scott Galloway's one of our lead investors. I don't know if you know Scott. You should. You'd love him. He just wrote a book called Notes on Being a Man. It's like number one New York Times bestseller.
Oh.
And read it. It's excellent.
Is it helpful? Not that I need it, but I mean.
Yeah, no, dude. I mean, for you and I reading it, you're like, yeah, it's too late for me to adopt these lessons or not. But
yeah, the chapter to betas.
but for anyone who has a future still ahead of them, like, I totally recommend Notes on Being a Man. So Noble Mobile, it's trying to solve two problems at once that I think are making Americans sad. So number one, the average American spends $83 a month on our wireless. I was spending $140 plus a month on Verizon just for myself, which is like apparently, you know, not that unusual.
Right.
In Europe, that number is $35 a month. So if you look at that math, that's like $50 a month difference times 12 is 600 times however many years you're going to be a wireless subscriber, right, which is all of them. Like, and you wind up with some, like, a number like $20,000, and then you put an interest rate on it.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're getting gouged by big wireless, Verizon in particular. Verizon gave their shareholders $11 billion in cash last year, and that's the only reason anyone holds their stock, because they're just giving them billions of dollars from chumps like me who are like overpaying them.
Right.
So number one was like Noble Mobile will cut your bill in half. You'll on average spend like something like $41 or $42 a month with us. The second part is that we will pay you up to $20 cash back based upon the data you use or don't use. So if you doom scroll, you know you're actually costing yourself a little bit of money. And so you're like, oh shoot, I'm a chump again. Let me doom scroll less. And the more data you don't use, the more money we give you at the end of the month. I can actually show you my data wheel right now. And so the average Noble user uses their phone 17% less in month two because we're very simple creatures. We like money. And
yes,
we know if we're going to get more money, we, you know, tend to respond to it. By the way, I'm a bad example of this in the sense that, like, I blow through my data cap on the regular because I'm a heavy phone user.
Yeah.
But this is like my data wheel.
I'm half blind.
Oh, no, don't worry about it.
Let's see. It says $11.08.
This is how much money I'm going to get back at the end of my billing cycle. at the moment. And so anytime I'm using data, this is accurate for up to like 15 minutes. So anytime I use data, like the data wheel goes down a little bit. And then I'm like, oh, like, you know, and any money you get back on Noble Mobile, we then pay 5.5% interest on, with a goal of making it so that your cell phone plan is like this savings buddy, set it and forget it, encouraging you to log off more. But again, most you can ever pay us is 50. And so everyone's going to save money on this relative to the big guys.
Yeah.
But you'll save even more money if you log off, touch grass, look up, and hopefully, you know, like remember your family's, you know, birthdays and stuff like that.
I was very impressed with the ad because it was you walking around smacking phones out of people's hands, which I thought was very funny. But it's like, and you're the only, it's the only phone plan I've ever seen where you're encouraging people to not use it as much, because the ultimate penalty for the culture is worse. The people on their phones constantly is not good.
Oh yeah, we're getting gouged for an all-you-can-eat buffet that we don't really want anymore. And the more we eat, the worse we feel about ourselves. So this is a nerdy thing to say, but I'll tell you. Screen time is now what's called an economically inferior good, which is that poor people consume more. Mm. If you go into a rich household, they're like trying to keep their kids away from screens as long as possible. They're like, you know, and then what, you know what they do? They like hire like folks to like have their kids in like activities, try and keep them busy so that they're not on screens. If you're in a poor family, they're like, here's your screen. Just like, you know, have at it. And so Noble Mobile's trying to help people find a real balance, because our relationship with our phone now is one of the most important relationships for our well-being or mental health.
It's a weird addiction. Like it's like being your own pharmacist. Like you just keep giving yourself the dopamine. Every time I click on Facebook, every time I click on there, that little red thing, I got a message, and I just, it's really sickening.
It's even worse for folks like us who work in media, because you're like, hey, I'm working.
Yes.
Like, I got to put myself out
there.
That's right. I got to get like some views and likes. And so, you know, it feels productive.
Sure.
But my wife says to me, it's like the thing that makes me feel the worst for you is the fact that your job involves being on social media so much.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like it's a bummer.
I'm a comic. I have to try to convince my wife that Pornhub is work research. That's why I'm hours a night. I don't know, honey, it's for jokes. You want to go to a call? We haven't taken any calls yet. You might put the headphones on. I just won't be able to hear you. There we go.
It's like this and then.
Hello?
All right, I got you.
Hello, madam. You're on the phone.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm a 38-year-old woman, and I've never had a real boyfriend. I have been sleeping in the bed that I've had since I was 12, and my sex life for the past 10 years is basically just me tipping Romanian cam guys $50 to watch me cry into a pint of Halo Top ice cream while I rub one out with the handle of my Bed Bath & Beyond salad tones.
My
therapist keeps telling me to put myself out there, but every time I try and flirt with a guy, I word vomit about my endometriosis.
Hold on. Are you actually...
Do you have any advice for me?
Yes, I would like your number. I think I could certainly help you. I could watch you eat ice cream for $50 or however much you're paying. Andrew, how do you feel about a woman like this getting into her? How does she break this, what I think is a phenomenal habit, but she doesn't like it?
I feel like if you do put yourself out there, there's going to be no shortage of guys who are very happy to upgrade from the experience you described.
That's why he can run for office. That was a very diplomatic and good answer, and a very, very...
Oh, it's genuine. It's the truth.
Yes, very, very good answer, and it kind of summed it all up, and I had nothing except offering myself. Well, miss, do you not like how you look?
I mean, I'm not unhappy with how I look, but I have a full bush, and it's just too much work to upkeep it. And I hear a lot of criticism these days about having a full bush, and... I don't know.
I'm just going to double down on what I said before. It's like I really feel like there's no shortage of guys.
All right, well, madam, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. I would just say this. Andrew's right. Put yourself out there. The fact that you just watch cam guys with salad tongs and have a full bush is not going to deter most men. So good luck, madam. I'm sure you'll find the right guy. All right. I guess, you know, I hope we helped her.
Yeah, I'm very confident in our advice.
Yes, who's on the phone next, if anybody? Yeah. Let's talk about Lucy. L-U-C-Y, not L-O-O-S-I-E. My wife, I hate the smell of smoke. I hate it. It drives me crazy. But my wife happens to like nicotine. So Lucy is such a great solution. And everybody I know is enjoying Lucy's. They have, look at that, they have gum. They don't ask you to snap the product, but ow, I'm gonna snap the product. And they have these, and I guess they go into your gum, and they smell amazing. These are the ones, my wife's favorite one is this. You wanna hear something? Oh, you wanna hear something cute? She goes, what's my favorite flavor? And I go, cinnamon. How cute is that? It doesn't get any cuter. And sometimes they'll go, are you gonna have peppermint or wintermint or cinnamon? And she just melts and she hugs me. 100% pure nicotine, and it's always tobacco free. That to me is the best part, not just for you, but for the person that lives with you and doesn't want to deal with tobacco. Lucy Breakers are the nicotine pouches. They have an extra surprise. Each pouch, it's got a capsule, and it can be broken open to release extra flavor and to hydrate. A little hydration is very nice. Set yourself up with a subscription, and you can have Lucy delivered directly to your door, which is how they arrive here. I don't go out and get them. Why? Because I'm very famous, and I'm very important, and I'll say, bring me the Lucy's, and they do. You don't have to say that, but you can order it, and they'll bring them. What's your favorite Lucy flavor? That's what you ought to ask yourself. So you're going to have to try a whole bunch and determine which one you like best. Now, I don't know if I've told you, my wife's favorite, it's cinnamon. I want you to try cinnamon and then tell people you like that, but say it like that and go, did you try the cinnamon? And see if they think you're adorable. I challenge them not to. She takes the 4 milligram. I mean, there's all kinds of strengths. I guess it depends on how much nicotine you require, but I like that they do that. Let's level up your nicotine routine with Lucy. Go to lucy.co. lucy.co/Norton. Use the promo code Norton. Get 20% off your first order. Lucy has a 30-day refund policy if you change your mind. Again, lucy.co. Use the code Norton to get 20% off. And here comes the fine print. Lucy products are only for adults of legal age, and every order is age verified. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Some people have noticed that recently I turned, what did I turn into? A big fat pig, because I couldn't stop eating, and I'm ordering out, and the food is just, it's loaded with sodium, it's unhealthy. Eating well during the holidays is impossible. It doesn't feel impossible, it is impossible. That's why I use Factors, chef-prepared, dietitian-approved meals. Helps me stay balanced and energized through the most indulgent time of the year. I don't know why I said energized. Yeah, that's what it does. It helps me stay balanced and energized. But it is really good to keep you balanced. It's very difficult to eat healthy this time of year. Don't trust yourself because you're an idiot like I'm an idiot. Trust the chefs at Factor. Unlike meal kits that require a lot of prep and cooking, Factor delivers, and this is why I like it, because I'm lazy. Fully prepared, ready-to-eat meals in 2 minutes. What, do you not have 2 minutes? There's a lot of varieties. There's a great choice of meals, wider selection of weekly meal options. They have premium seafood choices like shrimp and salmon, no extra cost. And you can support your wellness goals. Now, I know you look at me now and go, Jim, you mean you're not done losing weight? No, I have a little bit more to go. You can enjoy even more GLP-1 friendly meals and a new Mediterranean diet options packed with protein, good for your fats, perfect when you're surrounded by holiday temptations, which is what I did on Thanksgiving. Yeah, I ate like a big disgusting hog. And the next day I went right back to my meals, and one day is not going to kill you. It's what you do the day after the holiday. That's what gets you. And I went right back to these meals because they're good and they're healthy. For the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by Thailand, China, more. Think savory Korean beef bowls or Thai-style coconut curry, which is phenomenal, by the way. And it's a refreshing break from the traditional holiday fare. 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier life. And I can say that. So maybe it's 98. That would imply there's only 100 customers. That doesn't make sense. So it's 97. Real people, real results. Stay on track. Even during the most indulgent season, I happen to like I love that coconut, the curry. I love it. And I love the seafood. I love the Thai options are great. And I get very bored very fast. So just order a bunch of different meals. You can order two or three a day. Or if you're only going to be home at night, just order one for the day. I don't care. It's your business. Eat smart at factormeals.com/Norton50off. That's N-O-R-T-O-N, number five, number zero, off. Norton50off. Use the code Norton50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. Wow. Code Norton50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. This exclusive holiday offer is not going to last. Lock in your savings before the new year rush. Now, this offer is only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to chumbacasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Andrew, how does it feel to be interviewed by a slug?
Sir, that was a very unkind remark about my physical appearance.
I'm sorry. Here's my serious question.
Okay.
Andrew, I'm a registered independent. I probably voted for you in the primaries all those years ago. Really appreciate that you were the only one at the time that was discussing job displacement risks posed by automation and brought those to the debate stage. I just want to highlight that it's getting harder and harder for up-and-comers in politics to communicate those risks, especially under this administration. For example, you know, New York Assembly member Alex Boers is the number one target by the $100 million AI super PAC for co-authoring the RAISE Act, ensuring AI labs prioritize safety. So I just hope that you can speak out on his behalf as someone with notoriety and the platform, so we can get more politicians like you in office talking about these things.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. I agree with you. Like, I wish more politicians took this on. I actually did realize that the AI companies had money and lobbyists and were willing to spend. And it makes me incredibly sad that you don't have politicians from both parties coming together and saying, look, guys, AI is real. This job displacement phenomenon is going to affect people of every geography, every political alignment. I saw a tweet by a tech influencer who said that in 2020, it was the left plus tech versus the right. In 2024, it was the right plus tech versus the left. And then in 2028, it's going to be the left plus the right against tech.
Mm.
And I thought that was really interesting and profound because, like, this AI wave is going to be a job-killing tsunami, and Americans are hip to it in the sense that 70% of Americans are concerned about it happening, and that crosses ideological lines. And so they're going to look up and be like, hey, guys, what are we doing about this? And if you have figures who are saying this is what we should do about it, we should be supporting them. So I'll definitely look into what you described.
You had a good thing, too. I think it was in your newsletter that I read. It was you did like the top AI. I forget the term you used, but it was basically the top jobs that AI is going to affect and then the ones that are the safest.
Yeah, totally.
And the ones that were the safest are things that you would imagine. They're like kind of like farm type things that are absolutely physical in nature. But I mean, just for now. So all these things that you think are going to, or that you're probably right about, that AI will take, is it something we have to stop, or do we have to adjust? Like when planes went from propellers to jets, or all these upgrades in our life, what's the line between we have to protect people's jobs and we have to kind of go with the upgrades that make life a lot easier?
Look, I think the genie's out of the bottle at this point. So if you were to say, hey, we're going to curb AI's replacement of people, you're late.
Yeah.
Like the horse out of the barn. And the example I use that everyone understands is that there are / were about 2 million call center workers in the United States still, and AI is going to replace them. And if you were to try and preserve those jobs, I mean, like, how do you even regulate that? It's like, hey, you must have people right. answering the phone. I mean, like, you know, like that would be a very odd intervention in the economy. So I agree with what Dario Amade, who's the CEO of one of the AI companies, who seems like the most with it, he says, like, look, tax us and distribute the money. We should. We should be taxing right. them and distributing the money because, like, that's something we can all see and understand. It's like, I'm not someone who thinks the government's going to be able to get everything right in terms of if they were to try and intervene in the economy in various ways. But I am fairly confident in the government's ability to send folks checks or wire transfers or whatever, like the way they did, during COVID. So that's where I would steer us. I campaigned on that in 2020 with the freedom dividend / universal basic income. And isn't a day that goes by where someone isn't like, hey, man, we need it. You were right. That sort of thing.
So do you think that's like, let's say aside from that, which the jobs, what people are so paranoid about AI taking over and kind of controlling the narratives of the things we talk about, like, they're always trying to get rid of bots on social media. And they I just lost like 15,000 followers. Could they do these bot cleanses? But they could stop it, I think, if they wanted to. Do they almost want that stuff there because it increases engagement?
Yeah. I mean, all of the incentives are towards maximal rage the bots help with the rage. So, we need that. There was like that recent X revelation where it turns out that a lot of influencer accounts were from other countries, which means they're like from server farms and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then it undid that. It's like the veil was lifted.
Yeah.
So the social media algorithms are a big part of it. It's one reason why I'm excited about Noble Mobile. It's like, look, if you want to fight the algorithm, the best way to do so is to spend less time on these apps. And shocker too, I mean, there was a lawsuit that was unsealed that showed that if you log off of Facebook, you're happier within a week, or like not just Facebook, obviously Insta, like all social media platforms, you're happier in 7 days. And then Facebook actually did a study showing this, and they were like, oh shit, let's bury this study. And then they got asked about it by Congress, and they were like, we don't know. And then literally now it's been unsealed. It's like, yeah, we kind of did know. It's like you have to know that these platforms don't have our best interests at heart. They have their, quarterly results.
Because you have to opt out of the algorithm, I think, right? Like, I think that I don't know if they can make a law like this because they're private companies where you have to opt in. Like, I think if you want to opt in every day, you can. But I don't think you should have to opt out of it. I think you should automatically be out of it.
Oh, yeah, totally, man.
And then just opt in if you want to. And I think a lot less people would opt in.
Yeah. Like, you have to change the incentives and change the mechanics. Like, that's the best way out of the mess. And, when these platforms got started, we didn't fully understand. And so they were like, look, let's make it ad supported. Let's maximize engagement. And there was a minute when people were like, okay, like, I'm cool with this. And then now we figured out it's very corrosive and destructive, and it's going to make us hate and fear each other. So what you should do is change the mechanics. We don't have the clout or the visionary policymakers. And it does make me sad that, like, someone, it sounds like this legislator proposed something sensible and then got railed. Which doesn't surprise me. That's the way our political system works right now.
So what's the answer to it? Like, when you, like, if you allow tech without anybody regulating it, and I'm not even saying it should be regulated, but it all goes by the ideology of whoever owns it. Like, if you look at when Jack Dorsey had Twitter, they really were much more friendly to the sacred cows of the left, and those are the things they would strike your account for. And then, which was bad because then they dictated the narrative and now Elon kind of dictates the narrative. So what's the way to kind of have it where they're, it's just there and
No, it's totally true. Like I saw a graphic that was put up recently. There's now like a huge level of overlap between billionaires and our media organizations. Mm. If you look at it, you know, Elon owns X, Bezos owns the Washington Post, Benioff owns Time. You know, like most of them, you actually can be like, who owns this? And be like, oh, yeah, they own it. And it starts mapping to it. I mean, now, the Ellison family owns Paramount, which is probably going to buy Warner Brothers. They already have CBS. That's why they hired Barry Weiss. So, you're now kind of getting rid of the illusions.
Right.
There's like a personal point of view that's going to percolate throughout that institution and organization. And it's a tough one because if you leave a news organization to its own devices, you know, we've seen like certain types of cultures arise that then Elon looked up and was like, yo, I'm going to fight this.
Yeah.
And there were some elements of it where I was like, yeah, there were excesses. And it's like, oh, like, you know, this new result seems to have excesses of its own.
Sure.
So one of the proposals I think Jack Dorsey had when he was ahead of Twitter, he's like, look, we're making a bunch of calls that we have no business making. Like, you know, it's like we shouldn't be like given this much power or authority. So what he proposed is that you have the media organizations and you have government and you have nonprofits come together and be like, look, let's figure out some guidelines and rules of the road that we can all sort of abide by and like have different points of view that aren't systematically like oppressed or elevated. And I was like, well, that's as reasonable a suggestion as I've heard.
Did he have that? Did he say that? Because I remember Ted Cruz, it was one of the few moments I really enjoyed Ted Cruz when he was questioning him. Did he say that when he was still in charge of Twitter or was it after he left?
I think he said it when he was still in charge of Twitter. And I was like, oh, that's a reasonable suggestion. Because like, I actually feel a little bit bad for the folks who are in charge of these entities because, you know, it's like no matter where you draw the line, people are going to get pissed off.
Yeah.
But then you draw the line a particular way because of who you are and your point of view and whatnot. And then people start like, reacting in the way that they do. I mean, the reaction of X being taken over by Elon was the creation of Blue Sky. And then like everyone went over to Blue Sky. Not everyone, but like the folks who liked old Twitter like went to Blue Sky. So you have this fragmentation of what once was like the town square. And as someone who's still on X quite heavily, like the experience has changed and not for the better. I mean, I will say that. It's like it used to be that you have certain types of conversations or exchanges. And I would even meet people on Twitter that we would then get together and make friends like on the regular.
Really?
Yeah, in a way that does not happen today.
Right.
like it was, so that was, not all the changes have been great.
Like I like Elon. Like I don't think he's perfect, but I like the idea of what Doge was going after government excess. And I think he was somewhat successful in it. What was the thing that he did wrong in your mind or that people perceived as wrong that got him so much flack?
So look, like I'm sympathetic to a lot of what Elon was looking to achieve.
Yeah.
And I think that what I said at the time was like, Elon is miscast as a government reformer. Like Elon's best in a private industry setting where he could be like, look, we're going to make rockets to Mars. And like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make few components. We're going to make electric cars. Like, you know, he's very much like a corporate type leader.
Yeah.
And then you put that person in a political environment where, everything's a trade off. Every cost cutting has like X number of like jobs that are going to be cut that are, you know, like that do represent human beings and families and the rest of it. And like his like efficiency mindset was just a poor fit. Because it turns out that people in government could give a shit about efficiency. And so it's like, we'll pretend we care. But as soon as you like, you know, aren't here like, you know, making it happen, like we're just going to turn around. And by the way, like I think Elon recently said like something pretty similar to that. He was like, oh, man, like, you know, you realize that the changes you can make like are going to maybe change the timeline a little, but don't change the fundamental trajectory.
And what? And also, like with ICE, I think so many of us have mixed feelings about ICE. Like I've had arguments with comics, and they're 100% against them. And I'm like, no, I think that getting criminals out who are not here legally is fair. But also, I don't want to see families hassled, and I don't want to see American citizens have to show their fucking paper. Like, it's almost like in order to get the numbers up, they're just doing this giant sweep, and it's just like they're not doing what I think they should do.
Yeah, totally. And this is the thing I'd say is that, like, I think a lot of folks got on board with Trump because they hated bureaucracy. They felt like the Democrats had this like weird, like rule application bureaucracy. Like, oh, we hate this. And then the way they're using ICE is the same kind of bureaucracy that we hate.
Right.
Where they're like, hey, we're gonna have a quota. We're gonna get like numbers, and you're just like, yo, this person is not a threat and is like perfectly fine and like has a family, has been here for 20. It's like, oh, we don't give a shit. Like, you know, we've got like a thing to read. Like, there's like a complete, absence of judgment. That, and I think the absence of judgment is what pissed us off about like what was going on before Trump. It's like, look, like, you know, school should be open. The kids should be outdoors. Like, what's the freaking problem here? And like, they were like, no, rule. And then it's like, yeah, you know, and then in reverse with ICE, it's like, yo, guys, like any sane human would see that like this is not who we're concerned about. This is like a family that's been here for 17 years and they're like quietly working. Like, you know, like, we're perfectly happy to have this person, you know, and their family in the community.
The absence of judgment. That's exactly that's a really great way to put it, because yeah, I understand technically that they're here. Really, I get the technicality of it, but no one is. When I see those Mexican guys outside of Home Depot, those guys are trying to work.
Totally.
Like those guys are doing something that I certainly don't want to fucking do. They're standing there at 6 a.m. ready to go to work.
Yeah, we were all on board with like, look, if you're a criminal, you know, drug smuggler, like trafficker, like yes, like get the fuck out and like, you know, like be our guest, ICE. But then if it's like, hey, we're just rounding up the Home Depot guys, and like, you know, like, the rest of it is like, there's a lot of like weird like theatrics, and again, you know, like tribal cues going on. We're just like, yo, this isn't good. Like, this is gross.
And it seems like people who talk about tribal cues or the things, they don't get the attention because they don't hit the button. They don't hit the yes or the fuck you. They don't hit either one of those two buttons when you're kind of. When you're looking at things in the middle a little bit, people think you're afraid to take a stance, which is not the case.
Yeah, and what's fun, too, is like, so I'm a reformer of the system, and the thing I tell people is like, look, we don't need 51%. We probably need 10% in the middle, like the lucid 10%, because, you know, all you need is like 2, 3, 4 Senate seats, and then you can control what's going on in the Senate, because like then the sides are deadlocked and can't do anything without like your 3 or 4 in the middle. By the way, you already have like one of those. So like, you
who's
know,
the one,
Lisa Murkowski, okay, who already voted to impeach Trump, made it back through the Alaska primary because they got rid of party primaries in Alaska. I mean, so then she's functionally an independent and can,
right,
you know, voter conscience and the rest of it. So, you know, you get like the lucid, reasonable 5 to 10% who can become like this lever or fulcrum in the middle, and then you have a chance. And the lever or fulcrum in the middle is also for things like open primaries and, you know, trying to reform the system so you're not whipsawed by the ideological faction on the far left or the far right.
What's the most critical thing? First of all, let me ask you, would you run again? Because, I mean, you've run for president, you've run for mayor, and people do like you.
No, thanks, man.
Would you run again? And if so, what would you run as?
I'm too young not to run again. You know what I mean? My joke is, like, I've got another 30 years.
Sure.
Like, yeah, in this environment. You know, that joke made more sense when it was like, you know, the Battle of the Octogenarians or whatever.
Yeah.
So I almost certainly am going to run again. I want to run in a way that helps reform the system. So I'd be unlikely to run as in a way that's like, you know, hey, like if I win, then like it's going to be the same dynamic, the same shit. I think that we should have an independent primary in the presidential cycle where we can all vote in our smartphones. And it's like,
right,
you know, Cuban, me, Oprah, Matthew McConaughey, America's going to be all right. Like, you know, like stuff where you're like, hey, this is actually genuine democracy, lowercase d democracy, because waiting to hear what 6.5% of Iowans think in February, people are like, wait a minute, like, I can barely find Iowa. Like, you know, like you have like the very, very strange, archaic, unrepresentative selection system.
Yes.
That you saw, by the way, highlighted by the lack of a Democratic primary in 2024. I joke that they should change their name to the selectors instead of the Democrats. You're not going to have a vote.
Right.
On like who your nominee is going to be. So, you know, the way out of that, in my opinion, is letting everyone vote. And the easiest way to do that is to have it be done on your smartphone, which is, by the way, can be totally buttoned up and secure. You can like show journalists and the rest of it, and just like it's all auditable. You could verify it via personalized QR code that gets sent to your mailing address. It's very hard to defraud, you know. And a political party, by the way, I happen to be the co-founder and co-chair of the third biggest political party in the country by resources, which is saying very little. It just means that, you know, we're better at raising money than the Libertarians or the Greens, which is not very hard. it turns out. No offense to anyone listening to this. We're not part of that. but a political party can design its nomination process however it wants. So you could say like, hey, our nomination process is going to be done over smartphone, multiple rounds. You could have Joe Rogan or you like host the debates. And like,
I think they'd go with Rogan. I appreciate that's very kind of you, but I think they would go with Rogan.
But I think the whole thing would rate better than the traditional stuff, because the traditional stuff, and you'd have a much more interesting exchange of ideas, more interesting characters. There are all these excellent people that would be more interested in that race than subjecting themselves to either a Democratic primary or Republican primary. As someone who's been through a Democratic primary, it's like, you know, like you're going to get shivved for stuff. You're like, wait, what's going on? Whereas like an independent primary, you could make your case. The American people could, you know, like make up their own mind. And millions of Americans, tens of millions of Americans would be like, okay, I see what this group is doing. They're actually trying to take it back for me, for us, the people. And even if your horse didn't win, you'd be like, I'm still down with this crew.
And there was a lot of conspiracies, and I'm not big on conspiracy, but when Kamala got nominated, that Obama didn't really want to, that he wanted it to play out and have the a primary or a primary, and Biden just kind of endorsed her like the same day.
Oh yeah, I was a big part. I mean, I wasn't a big part. I was a part of that.
What did you think of it? And do you think Biden endorsed her to be helpful, or because he was like, oh okay, knowing what would happen?
I mean, Biden endorsing her was in part a big fuck you to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, honestly.
It was.
Because both Pelosi and Obama were like, hey, we should have a primary. And Biden was like, how about instead we do this? And by the way, like, Joe Biden was shit-talking about Kamala and her prospects as a candidate like days before. And like his argument during that time was like, hey, guys, you need me because who are you going to run? Kamala? like that's what he was saying, like, you know, just like 48 hours before he was like, and it's Kamala. So like that, and I say I was close to this because I had endorsed a guy named Dean Phillips during this time.
Yeah, I remember his name.
Who ran against Joe Biden in the Democratic primary in 2024. And the Dems character assassinated the heck out of Dean in a way that was like really dark. And I saw it all happen. I was like, yo, man, this is like a third term member of Congress from your party raising his hand saying Joe Biden's too old, which, by the way, is 100% correct.
Yes.
So, like, you know, why are you like dynamiting him? And by the way, they called Dean racist. Like, all the stuff went down. I was like, yo, this is gross again. And then 5 months later, Joe Biden drops out. There are a bunch of people who are agitating for a primary, including Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. And then Joe Biden, you know, drops out. And then literally like later that morning, essentially, is like, and it's Kamala. And then during that day, I was part of a crew being like, is anyone going to challenge Kamala? And there were a few people that you thought might, like Gavin Newsom was one, J.B. Pritzker was another, like people that actually already had organizations around them.
Yes.
Where they kind of thought there was a chance that Joe Biden might drop out, so they might run. So we were like, is anyone going to run against Kamala? And then one by one, each of them endorsed Kamala. And then when JB endorsed Kamala, like me and the group text I was on, they were like, all right, it's a wrap. It's over. Like, you know, because like there were three or four people, Andy Beshear was another, that might have run against her and did not.
Do you think Biden was pissed at like you said, a big fuck you, that would imply anger, because he felt that they were pushing him out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's documented. Like that he felt like they were really, really, they done it. They did him dirty.
What was her big mistake? Because, like, again, she's another one. Like, I didn't like her, but I'm like, maybe I'm just reading her wrong. I felt she should have done Rogan, not because it's Joe.
That's crazy not to.
To have the long conversation.
dude, I mean, that was malpractice. Like, I even at the time was like, yo, is there some secret poll that has her up like 8 points I don't know about? Because, like, other than that, like, this is going to be a bigger audience than the debates were. I thought Joe would be like perfectly fair towards her.
Yeah,
it's like
it
would not have been some kind of weird ambush. And by the way, it, you know, like, I don't even think it's just Kamala, too. If she, like, because he had on both Trump and J.D. Vance. If he has on Kamala, he probably has Tim Walz on, too. And then it's like kind of, you know, at least like debatable. That was just terrible, terrible advice from her team that I think just did not have confidence in her.
Well, she didn't go to the Al Smith dinner either. And I think part of that is also like that live interaction thing. Maybe she was uncomfortable with that. Like, I think that they like to keep her in, it seemed like, very controlled environments.
Yeah, no. And there was part of it was like a lack of trust and chemistry built up, because what happened was Kamala essentially inherited aspects of the Biden team. And then the Biden team did not believe. And they were like, look, risk reward, sitting down with Joe Rogan for an hour and a half or whatever. It's like, nah, skip it. Which, again, was just so fucking dumb and terrible.
Terrible blunder. Would it be because she was also going to have to defend his record? Like, at least when you're attacking the candidate, we need change, but it's kind of hard when you're the vice president to go, we need change. You've been there for 4 years.
She was in a bit of a bind, but she could have, you know, done herself a great service, in my opinion, by being like, look, not Joe Biden, going to do things differently. Like, you know, his administration, like, proud of the things that we did that were good, but it's going to be a different sheriff, different ball game. I mean, that's not perfect, you know, when people are pissed about the border or whatever, but it's better than being like, wouldn't change a thing.
Right.
and so that there was like a message, by the way, from Joe Biden to Kamala during this time was like, hey, no daylight between the two of us. In other words,
nothing
like
nothing separate about the messages.
Yeah. Like, you know, proud of the administration. Don't throw the administration on the bus. Like, this is a Joe Biden failure, too. Here's the thing. Joe Biden should never run again. But then after he got out of the way and gave it to Kamala, he should have been like, do whatever the fuck you need to do.
Yeah.
Like, if you got to throw me under the bus, throw me under the bus. Like, let's freaking go.
Whatever you have to do to kind of get people to, yeah.
Yeah, be your own freaking person, candidate. Like, do not feel like you have to apologize for any of the shit we did. Just be like, look, you know, we'll do it differently because, like, I'm a different person. But Joe did not say that at all. Joe said the opposite. Joe was like, no daylight between the two of us. Like, you're proud of everything the administration did. And then Kamala, to her detriment, was like, you know, a good, like, you know, team player. And at that time, Joe Biden was still the president of the United States, and she's still so she was like, all right. And then she goes in The View, and they were like, hey, would you do anything differently? She's like, can't think of anything. And then people were like, oh, fuck this. Wow. You know, like this isn't. So, I mean, not to put it all on Joe, but like, Joe Biden did not do the country any favors.
What do you think Trump, because I'm fascinated by Trump. Like, some things I like, some things I don't like. What do you think his two questions? What do you think his greatest strength is that really draws people to him? And what do you think his greatest Achilles, or was his Achilles heel?
By the way, people who know me know I'm not a Trump guy at all.
Right.
Like, he got me into public life, for better or for worse. So if you hate Yang, you Trump to thank. But so his strength is that he is an awesome communicator and movement builder, and it's in part because he seems authentic. He seems like he's speaking from the heart like a normal person would, in part because he'll like trash any conventions. I joke, by the way, it's like, look, he's got like a three-part communication style that Democrats are like completely mystified by. So part one is politics, whatever. Part two is a pro wrestling villain,
mm-hmm.
You know, WWE Hall of Famer. And part three is he's an insult comic.
And so
Democrats are stuck on wavelength one, and then he's like hitting wavelengths 1, 2, and 3, and then he's like, and by the way, real life fucking human beings like respond to 1, 2, and 3.
Sure.
You know, it's like, I was a huge wrestling fan growing up. I'm a huge comedy fan. I get the appeal. You know,
yeah.
like it's kind of, he's funny. You know, it's like, when's the last time a Democrat was funny? I can't even think of one. Like, the last funny Democrat was a guy named Al Franken who they drummed out of the party.
Yeah.
For some, you know, like
for a silly photo,
for some bad photos, but like, whatever. I mean, you know, like, you just like kneecapped yourself. Congratulations. And then, and by the way, they look back and they're like, oh yeah, we shouldn't have done that. It's like, yeah, again, like, you know, you can't like, you know, bring the guy's career back. I mean, like, you wish you could. So that's Donald Trump's superpower. His Achilles heel is that he's not an excellent team builder. like he's, if you look at administration one, like, half those people are on the outs. with him. I mean, like, some are, like, you know, literally, like, you know, like, in fear of being imprisoned and stuff like that. And I've run multiple organizations. Like, it's a real big red flag when the people around you all fly the coop or hate you after X period. And so he's got, like, this swirling orbit of different people that are around him for their own ends. And so he's got a lot of either yes men and women, or, like, I've got my own agenda, like, kind of using him for their own purposes. And that, to me, is coming through to the American people in a way. Because, like, why did we – no, I mean, I didn't vote for him. But why did people vote for him? It's like – pissed off at the border, pissed off at grocery prices and inflation. And so now they're looking up being like, hey, like is he grinding on those things? To me, the tariffs went the other direction. And then, like, the stuff he's, you know, preoccupied with also, like, you know, isn't going in that direction. And so people are turning on him, which, by the way, to me, was all totally predictable. You know, like I got the folks who are not fans of, like, Kamala or what had happened with the Democratic administration. Like, you know, I totally understood that. I mean, hell, I was, like, in New Hampshire with Dean Phillips being like, hey, we should, like, do something different. But then I was like, oh, Trump's going to, like, Trump to me is, like, an accelerant to the disintegration of various institutions. And I think that we're going to miss some of these institutions.
And there was this weird thing. And again, Mike Johnson said something about, well, people don't know how it works around here. And we talk about the Epstein list. What do you think is the real, like, forget the politics. What is the real reason? I don't think it's obvious that he's afraid of his name. And maybe that's it. But I don't think that's it. What do you think is the real reason that they are? Because both sides seem like they were very hesitant just to dump the whole thing until they thought it could hurt the other group.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think is holding up the Epstein files? Or what are they really trying to prevent? Why did I stutter? I don't know.
I mean,
I'm wearing a monitor.
Dude, I feel like we all know, man. I mean, like, we all know Trump's very, very much, like, you know, like, hang out on Epstein Island, spent a lot of time there. Like,
was he on the,
like,
island? I never heard he was on the island.
I mean, if not on the island, then, like, you know, like, among the trafficked girls and women. Like, you know, I mean, he was pretty prominent among a lot of the stuff, like, you know, like, photographs and accounts and messages. And I think his involvement is gross enough where it wasn't like he was just like, yeah, you know, I was one of the people on this thing. Like, it was enough where even he seems like to not want to be, like, forthright about it. And are there a bunch of prominent Dems who are probably there too, including a guy named Larry Summers who just got also, like, ousted from public life?
From Harvard, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, it was a very prominent Dem. I think he was, like, one of, like, national economic advisors. And now he's out because he was, you know, asking Epstein for advice on how to bang a TA. So, like, that, so that, you know, like,
teacher's assistant.
He had a TA at Harvard that he was trying to get with, and he was asking Epstein for advice, and it's in emails. And so now he's like, I'm deeply ashamed, and that, you know, they just essentially canned him. But so one of the things you probably know, and I hate to be the bringer of this news to folks who did not know, but a lot of these people fucking know each other. Like, you get to a certain level and, like, people all know each other. And so there were folks in these files that everyone knows I was connected with. And so both sides was like, yo, like, I'm not excited to see this out.
And it's also one of those things, like, it's almost like the nuclear war option. Like, yeah, you'll be blown up, but so will we.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Both groups have a vested interest in not.
Yeah, totally. That is it.
Do you think it comes out? I mean, do you think it's gotten to a point of critical mass now where people are like the whole country wants to get this behind us? Do you think it comes out?
I think something comes out, but what I'm hearing is that it's a redacted version. So then you're going to see and be like, hey, was that complete? And it's not complete. And so then you'll be able to make of it what you want.
Okay. You don't think that they'll actually just dump it completely raw?
Everything I'm seeing is like, look, like, we're talking about something with edits.
Did Pam Bondi and Kash Patel kind of get thrown under the bus in this whole thing? Like, were they legit in wanting to release it and then just not allowed to?
You know, I think, I mean, if you look at the record, like, J.D. Vance was for releasing it, like, you know, like, back in the day, like, everyone before they were in power was like, let's release it, no problem. And then you're in power, and then Trump's like, yo, like not into it. And so everyone's like, oh, like, let me recant or change my tune on that. In the abstract, everyone's for it.
Yeah, I guess so. And before we wrap up, I just, we have one more call. Is there anybody?
I also have a question.
Sure.
How do you think America sobers up from its, like, conspiracy theory addiction?
I mean, it's going to be a long long way back. So here's what the math says. We're more polarized than ever. AI is going to come eat a lot of jobs. It's going to be a really tough, nasty, difficult time. We're going to go through it. And then at the end of it is going to be something called exhaustion. That's the technical term. And then after everyone's exhausted, like where you literally can't even be mad anymore because like so much shit has gone down, then we come together and say, like, okay, like, what are we going to do in real life? And other societies have been through a version of this. So right now, I don't think we're exhausted yet. Okay. I've kind of got some bad news. Like, some of you are exhausted, but we're not all.
Some people have great cardio, yeah.
And then, too good cardio for this. Too much into the tribalism. So when we hit rock bottom, then we will come together and figure out a way out. And like my job is, my goal is to be like, at the ready when that day comes and have tools, have a movement, have people, and try and be part of the group that's pulling us out.
And when you were running it in political life and you're still in it, do you have any insight into what's like, again, I hate to ask a UFO question because I'm not a conspiracy guy with that, but did you try to figure anything out or find anything out or go through connections you knew to see if any of it was true or not?
Unfortunately, I was 1 degree out from that. I mean, one of my campaign promises was like, I'll totally spill the beans. I have gotten indication that there are beans to be spilt. So
really?
I mean, that's all I heard. That's like, there's something they get briefed on.
Yeah, George Santos I had on, and he was like, there were certain things he was very funny with, but that one he wouldn't. He was like, the things that he was briefed on, he can't talk about, which was kind of frustrating because I really would like to know.
Yeah, I know, wouldn't we all? But I wonder, man, if I ever get in there, like maybe I'll tell you what they tell me, what's in the Manila folder, what's in Area 51, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, Area 51 is probably nothing but like just regular military aircraft. I think that's, people were seeing like these stealth bombers in the 50s and 60s being tested, and they're like, it's a spaceship, and it wasn't. It was just a stealth bomber.
You know, I interviewed, you might have been on your podcast at some point, but I interviewed a fighter pilot who saw like the...
David Fravor?
Maybe. Who saw the unidentified flying object like up close, and I was like,
the Tic Tac, yeah.
I was like, yo, this is very credible. And like, there is absolutely no reason why this guy would destroy his career in this way. Like, I find it genuine. I think, and by the way, this does put our stuff in perspective, doesn't it? Where you like think like, yeah, like there's another civilization. Out down here checking things out.
All right. Do we have one more call?
Doesn't it feel oddly like the Epstein files then in a, like, why?
Well, if the aliens are small. But yeah, but does it feel like that? Like it's one of those things that both sides are kind of... Is that what you mean, both sides protecting?
Yeah, I do think, maybe the enormity of it, the impact it would have. But I feel like this stuff is, like, inching closer to being accepted knowledge, I feel like your career generally was destroyed. It was destroyed for political figures, or like, I believe in aliens. It's like, oh, like, this guy's crazy. Now it's like, I believe in aliens. It's like, yeah, probably.
Spilling the beans with Andrew Yang. That's going to be the name of this episode. All right, and let's just do one more call if there's anybody. And just say hello. You're on with the great Andrew Yang.
Hello, this is Pete. Jim, big fan of yours, brother. You're my favorite comic.
Thank you, buddy.
Glad to be on with you. This question is for Mr. Yang. Mr. Yang, with your universal basic income, I admire the premise and I support that. My question is, if that were to come to pass, the universal, basic income, would you have concerns about corporations, really getting at that money? Basically our country was built on capitalism, and monopolies really have cut, to the core of the American middle class. So would you be concerned that, that would be another issue with corporations getting at that universal basic income? Or do you feel that it would have to correlate with stronger anti-monopolization?
I love this question so much.
I was going to ask it, by the way.
What I say to folks is that, capitalism doesn't work so well if we don't have money to spend. We don't have jobs because of AI and whatnot. Universal basic income would be capitalism where income doesn't start at zero. So if you look at the numbers, GDP right now is around $85,000 a head. And it's going to go up with AI, you know, regardless of what happens in terms of like the stock prices of these companies. So at a certain point, you're like, you know, 85K ahead, 90K ahead, like at some point we might be better served by trying to put in a foundational layer or minimum. And I said, look, let's start at like 12K, like a person. Now, my joke is that like at this point in American life, America's slogan should be like trying to extract as much revenue from each person as humanly possible.
Right.
And so would corporates try and do the same here? Totally. Like, do you need to try and create meaningful competition in areas where there is not that right now? Yes. Now, us all having money to spend would help there be competition in some industries. In some industries, you still might need to like actually intervene. And a lot of the tech industries tend to gravitate towards winner take all. My joke on the debate stage a number of years ago was like, when's the last time you binged anything?
Right.
You know, yeah.
It's no like, one's asked Jeeves-ing.
Yeah. So there are certain marketplaces where you're like, you know what, like you either need competition or you need to have some kind of like, you know, disciplinarian of like the likely corporate practice, which is to rent seek. And that's one of the things that drives me nuts when people are like, oh, capitalism, socialism. It's like, man, like everyone is for capitalism on the profits and then socialism on the losses. Like
right.
Everyone gets bailed out when it's like, when it's fucking crunch time, you know, like COVID happens and like cruise companies, like, you know, got made whole by like the rescue package. And I was like, look, it was a choice, you know, yeah. He made a choice, but then like pretending that this was not like, you know, an actual policy choice. Like there's like, oh, survival of the fittest or whatever. Like, no, it wasn't. It was like, you know, survival of the best connected. So like, let's just get real about it. And if a corporation's in position to extract, like, you know, like more than is sane, then maybe you have to do something about it.
All right. And as we wrap up, I just want to say, do you think 17%, Steve Forbes ran, and I think he wanted the 17%. I think he would remove deductions across the board tax. That always seemed very logical to me. Do you think that works if they take away a lot of the write-offs and people just pay 17%?
All right. The main thing here is like, look, we need to tax AI or compute. Because like that's where a lot of the money is going to flow.
Right.
So that's where I'd start. I want to tax things that are not like labor income. Right. So we need more of. I'm not against a flat tax if it made sense because of the administration. But like, I just want to go where the money is. I used to joke. I was like, I don't care about the town fucking dentist. I care about Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
You know, like Bezos. You know, like, what's Bezos' salary? Probably $0, but, like, he's a freaking, you know, like, billionaire many, many times over. I do want to say to anyone who wants to check out Noble Mobile, if you go to noblemobile.com/yang, we're offering 3 free months to fans of mine.
Nice.
Which we're very happy to extend here to your fans, Jim.
Sure.
Want to save you money, want to get you looking up off your phone. But, like, we are getting gouged by big wireless, and this is something I can start trying to help people with, like, right fucking now. You know, I'm like an impatient guy. Like, I don't want to wait until I'm president or whatever.
Well, I hope you do run again. You're such a smart guy, and I really like the things you say a lot. And thank you for this book, The War on Normal People. I have not read this yet. And you have a new book coming out called, what's it, Hey Yang?
Where's My $1,000? I'm doing an event here in New York. You know, if you go to andrewyang.com, you can see I'm just starting to schedule a book tour.
Okay, that's good. And also you have these like wireless parties where people show up without their phones.
Phone-free parties. There's one in New York as well later in December. If you go to offlineparty.com, we put your phone in a bag and then you have to make something called eye contact.
Yeah.
But dude, the best thing about the last party was that like a woman excitedly came over and be like, oh my God, I just gave a guy my number on a napkin. And I was like, yes, it's like back to the, you know, 90s and early 2000s.
And then people, I guess, take pictures with portable or disposable cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, no, it's a blast. You know, I hang out with Chappelle and Chappelle always takes everyone's phone away.
The underbags, yeah.
And you got to say, like, you do feel much more at ease.
Right, knowing someone's not recording you or videotaping you at every moment. Yeah.
Yeah, what happens offline stays offline.
Well, Andrew, I appreciate it. I am a fan of what you, the things you say, and I hope you run for something again.
Well, thanks, Jim. I'll come back here and announce it.
Yeah, please do. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for calling my show. The episode's over, it's time to go. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. I hope everything works out. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. Don't blame me when it doesn't work out. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. Don't blame me when it doesn't work out.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.